on the data topics podcast. So last time we had a first kind of high level discussion about data mesh. So in summary, I think Bart, you said it well when you said you summarized it saying, you know, basically it's about decentralization and it's about product picking. I think those are two key elements, are also the two key elements I mentioned by two of the principles, let's say. We had the two other principles are more architecturally related and organizationally related. We'll tackle the organizational part maybe in the next podcast, but for today, let's maybe focus on more the architectural part. So how can you architecturally implement this? So that's the topic of today. Around the table, we have Gauthier.
Hi, so, again.
Hi, Bruno.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Bart.
Hey.
Hi, Nodo.
Hello.
Just before we go in depth, I think it's worth mentioning that end of last episode, Murilo promised to close this episode with an inspirational quote. So I think something to look forward to.
Exactly.
I'm doing my research right now. Thorough. I won't let you down. It's a commitment.
I think like it's worth, and I'm looking a bit at Murilo after this, but before we start tackling a really technical stuff, I think we need to talk a bit about architecture, like what does it look like, and then we can talk about what does that entail for the different team members in terms of stack as well, tooling. But architecturally speaking, good enough.
How do we build this?
Yeah.
I think there's many ways you can go with it, right? I think the exchange of data is quite important, I think, so because you have a decentralized thing, but you still want all dots to be able to connect to each other. That's one aspect. So the other one is also how is the data at rest or moving, right? Because if you have a lot of data moving around, you could go to something like Kafka with just a bunch of topics. Which are your different data?
What are the more, like, let's say, before really diving into technologies, like what are the high-level things that you look for? Like technically speaking, like what are the components that are key concepts inside a data mesh architecture? Like really,
interoperability for sure, you know, interoperability.
A domain needs to expose its data, right? Like it can extract it from somewhere and then load it and transform, or it can just produce it directly in the right format also. I think this is definitely also possible.
So each team needs a good way to do ETL, basically. Standard way to do ETL.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we're not too much like kind of applying our background on the problem here. Like we're very much biased into that. Source team could just... could be their existing log that they are exposing, for example, right? Like you don't necessarily need to do ETL for a source team to expose data in the proper way. I think my fantasy would be that that they are producing proper domain events, right, in a Kafka stack, and then that's it basically for them. So I think the making sure that the different dots can connect to each other is the basis. Then after that, you need to have a few archetypes of how you implement such a dot with definitely also one where you do data transformation, right? Like kind of like a DBT kind of thing that needs to be available for if any team wants to prepare certain data sets in more a bit batch oriented way.
Templates for like providing a good template that everybody can use.
Yeah, archetypes or templates. Yeah, for. For the different ways that you see different teams doing this.
How
I think, yeah.
How do you, and again, not naming tools, but of course, like everybody has ideas there, like how do you, because decentralization means like there is a big focus on collaboration, like how do you bring people together around certain data products? How do you get people to know what's available, what quality is there, what can you do with it? Like, how do you do these things?
I think that's where data catalogs come into play. I mean, I think it's going to be a key component of your data mesh. There's this concept of, you know, that everything needs to be fair. So it's findable, accessible, interoperable, and live. But so the those data catalogs are vital to make sure that basically your data products are discoverable. Mm-hmm. So in your architecture, somewhere at least, you need that catalog.
A very good data catalog.
Yeah, a very good data catalog or a catalog of catalogs, because it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
You know, so you need a good catalog. Yeah, that's essential.
But how are all these things specific to the data mesh? I mean, all these components are always routed, right? Whether you're in a data mesh console or not.
I think the abstraction level that you need to achieve to put it in more hands, it's kind of what is potentially different. But yeah, fundamentally, it's the same capabilities. I think because you want to make operational teams responsible, that you potentially have like a solution window that is different than if you're just a data team. Making it faster and more efficient is probably easier for those teams. If you really embed it in the let's say in a native way in the application, the way that you expose your data.
So does that also mean that you have if you want to abstract some stuff away because you also want to push some responsibilities to these domain teams? Does that mean you need to be very opinionated on how you want these domain teams to load data, get data, whatever? Does it require a higher opinionation?
Yeah, I'm Googling for the Spotify model. So I think if you're very much opinionated as a central team and kind of like telling everyone how they should do it, you're breaking the model, right? Like the idea is to empower the different teams to go with what they know and how they can do it. However, if you're the platform team and you're providing a number of assets, the idea is that you do those so good that they are the best option for the different teams.
So you're basically translating your central opinions in templates or archetypes or however you want to call them. That then can be used by these teams to fill in their own stuff.
Yeah.
And is there, if you look at it like that, is there a risk of not being able to follow new trends if you are so opinionated and you put everything in templates? Like, doesn't it become difficult to test new stuff like that?
I know a lot of people have opinions, but that's why you cannot force the teams to use it, right? Like the different teams need to evaluate what are the options and be confident day after day about the choice. And if you are just lagging with your features, then they are free to move to something else.
So this means, the way I would see this, like a central team providing templates or archetypes, however you want to call them. That also means like to keep up with the trends. Like if they actually want to support, it's probably letting the teams do their thing and picking out or building templates for the ones that are the most used and still letting a lot of freedom to the teams. Like that's the ideal dialogue. Like, I wouldn't want to be restricted to do one thing one way.
I think that makes sense. When we speak about the architecture, or can we name any, are there any specific components that need to be present on that architecture? Or technically it's everything, like if you take it really down to the letter, you know, applying the textbook, it means the teams can do what they want. But the example Bruno gave in the previous talk about, you know, if it's an API microservice and you kind of provide that, what's underneath doesn't really matter, as long as, you know, the service you provide is what's expected and is usable for the other party. But I think that's theory. Then there's practice. I mean, there's many reasons why you might want to standardize to a certain number of tools for like kind of license reasons for this and that. And there, I think your proposition makes perfect sense to say, you know, you have the central team that proposes some templates and some accelerators.
And also maybe just to be very clear, when you say template, you mean like providing like some tools and saying this is how you're going to do this and this and this, basically.
Have a good same default standard that you can rely on to do your data.
I think like to the extreme, it's instead of having a Spark job, you just have a YAML where you say this is my source, this is my destination, and you that's the only thing that you need to do, right? That's kind of like abstraction level to an extreme. not exactly this, but that concept on part of your archetypes, where if that's abstraction, right? So you're just kind of like making it a lot easier by doing certain things once making it easier for your distributed teams.
So I think we're a bit also touching, and that comes a bit with the API, like on the federated computing governance, like how do you make sure that everybody can talk to everybody? How do you, like, concretely speaking, like, because you mentioned Kafka, so I could see that as one way, like everybody does event, that's it, or we could do API, like standard REST API, like, or
yeah.
Maybe before you answer, can you maybe explain, Gauthier, what this term means? Federated computational governance?
Yeah.
Sounds very expensive.
So it's not expensive. It's what was previously mentioned. Like it's making sure that this ecosystem that you've built inside your data mesh, because a lot of different teams, a lot of different tools and everything, still goes in the same way and can interoperate with one another.
Hmm.
And the question is, like, what could tool or how can you facilitate that? And I see like Kafka or event streaming being a very good use case for that. APIs, the same way we do it a bit, or used to do it a bit with microservices, but I don't know what else can you target or what choices can you make as an organization to help facilitate that? Because everybody can do their stuff, but they need to speak a common language.
Yeah, right? I mean, very, like, it's quite restrictive, but in my what I would do is kind of like everybody goes onto BigQuery or everybody goes onto Snowflake. Like you pick one of those platforms where when you're sharing data sets, it's quite easy to manage it. Like it seems a little bit restrictive from the beginning, but those platforms are just really good. And I don't see really why they would complain about it, right? Like, and you just make sure that if you're sharing data sets, you're doing it on this platform. Like, maybe for pure operational low latency things, and you might start having deviations, but that's going to cover like 80% of your use cases. Because I think you see technologies like Starburst, Presto and /Trino, which are kind of like this. They have these features to be able to do federated queries, right, in a technical way.
That's more data. Virtualization.
Yeah, data virtualization kind of things, right? Like this, it sounds a little bit like you really need this because one team will expose its data in MySQL, and another team will expose it somewhere else, etc. Which is possible, yes, but I mean, like, just adding the constraint, please put it in this really good database, could really simplify your life also.
Right? So your advice is let everybody use the same medium and just like share that same medium for data.
Yeah, that's my personal opinion. I think that's what I would go for if you're implementing this. I think this is worth the.
But that comes a bit down again to the fact like you need to have a bit of a central opinion on what is good practice. What do we believe in? Like, what is the stack that we believe in?
Yeah.
And there's organizational reasons to support that. I fully agree with your stance. I think indeed there's theory, there's practice, like I mentioned earlier, and I think. Also for exchangeability between skills, you know, if everybody has different skills, then nobody can help. By community building around certain capabilities is a lot harder, and I think there's a lot of benefit to standardize at least a bit
on the
architecture front. So I think that makes perfect sense. We mentioned already a few tools, and you started on Starburst, but does that mean that kind of data mesh would be that? Data mesh setup would be composed of different tools than a standard setup. What would the stack look like?
I don't have a good answer to that. I'm also wondering a bit, like, because like you mentioned, for example, Snowflake. Then how is this any different from a more traditional data platform? If you say everybody go on Snowflake. It's just in the
because of the people that manage it, right? Like you would have your different distributed teams with their own schema, for example, and they are responsible for maybe three tables in one schema instead of one data team responsible for one schema or a few schemas with 100 tables.
But does that mean that there is no direct change in the stack that you actually need in a more traditional data warehouse slash data lake versus the data mesh approach?
Not necessarily. I think like in the spectrum of tools or capabilities, it's mm-hmm. the same. I think it's more up in the abstraction levels and the making it easy that you should be able to go.
And if we talk about these abstraction levels, like, do you have tools in mind that help you? Like, is for example, like, is DBT something that is a valuable component here? Like, because it gives easy access to your data to potentially people that are less knowledgeable about the underlying data sources, data storage.
I think it's an interesting question, right? Like, DBT and the analytics engineer was not did not appear because data mesh is there, right? Like, this is just
true. Yeah.
It's because of another reason. But I think indeed it is also analytics engineers are going to be closer to the business, more embedded, more distributed typically. So it is more or less in the same trend. So definitely this kind of IDBT on a good data warehouse can help in having a good solid technology for the different points on your mesh to be implemented. Yes. But I think it can go further than what is there today.
But another component of I think it's even the third principle, right? It's all about self-service. But self-service also might mean that you kind of propose, like you said, a different level of abstraction, that you propose tools to maybe less technical users in the business who are also able to use that stack to build their own data products, where part of the work is already being kind of done under the hood. I'd say, where a tool can support any thoughts on that self-service component, because
in a way you can see DBT as one abstraction level higher than a Python or a Scala Spark job, right? So
yeah, it can be different.
So I think it's already in the right direction. Probably can go further or better organized. I mean, I'm just wondering, like, it's if you would do DBT tomorrow with five different teams, do you expect them to manage it in one repo? How would you really organize it? I'm not sure, but you can figure it out. But like, there's not really one prescriptive way or best way that's really really emerging yet. So that's the kind of things that I'm wondering. How should you best apply it? Where you see that it's still emerging.
You talk about DBT, but stuff like Alteryx, which is also quite self-serve oriented, would it mean that we see more of those kind of tools appearing in the stack?
Yeah, Alteryx, I mean, the last time I used it a few years ago now, but it's just, I mean, it's a nice interface, don't get me wrong, but like, it's just an interface that's going to reproduce something very close to Python. Like, the big difference that you have between languages like Python and DBT, for example, is the declarative part. You don't say how you get it, you say what you want, which is really like a really good abstraction for data products. Like, if you want to build something, like, you want to think about the end result and not all the small steps that you have to go through to get there. I think Alteryx is more, like, you still have to describe everything. Basically, like, you can't just say, please aggregate this. You have to say, you need to, like, all the small steps, like, you need to join these things and, like, of course, still have to kind of these steps, but you can then, for example, with DBT, you could say, okay, like, execute this on Spark because you have a Spark thing. You could say, execute this on my Snowflake because you have a Snowflake connector. Like, it's still.
But maybe to make the counter argument, not necessarily for Alteryx, but also alike products, is that if you have purely a central data team, then the response is very likely to be a bit like you're saying now. It's good, but you reach a bit the limits. But it could very well be that for a specific domain team, Alteryx is the way to go. And it solves all their problems.
But I think it's what we said earlier, right? Like, there is a trade-off between having standard stuff, standard tooling that you believe in, and then, of course, there is always a deviation, and you should not prevent it. Like,
And I'm sure it's possible, but typically Alteryx is not necessarily used to prepare all the data, right? It's more going to be just consumption or ad hoc analysis or things like that, or but less really to like prepare a data set and expose it and run it every day automatically or so. I'm sure it's possible. So I think if you have companies today where you have like a separate consumption team where the business goes and they ask to this, they need to kind of go through the prioritization and they ask a team to prepare a certain data set. That's typically then probably I would say, okay, why are you not distributing this in the different teams, embedding it? And if it needs Alteryx to get that done, then I think it's definitely worth it. If they can do it with SQL, even better.
I mean, the higher level, the thing, the better. But something we're touching upon now is consumption. And like, it touches up a lot of different aspects. Like, how do you give access? How do you monitor access? How do you know what's there? How do you ask for access even? Like, and that, to me, like, is a very important part of like key feature of this. Like, if you want to enable other teams, they need to be able to find stuff and to quickly have access to it and to do something with it. So...
And also the evolving stuff, right? Because I think the finding it, giving access, etc. There, I think the catalogs, etc. Can help. I think the big idea of why you need to have these like consumption teams that prepare data is because but then somebody within IT knows where it's used, and we can do impact analysis if it needs to change, etc. This is going to be more complicated in a distributed way. And there, I think the kind of like API as an interface specification, a version and well-managed as a product. So you have a certain data set as the data product, you cannot just break it, right? Like, you have certain rules that you need to follow if you want to evolve this. So that kind of like a microservice, what I always liked as description of an API is something that I can use by just looking at the documentation, right? I don't need to go to the people to produce this to understand how it's running. You need something similar with what you're exposing as data set. And this is, it's a bit of a challenge, but I think these principles that are applied for APIs can probably also...
So we're talking about version data products then? Like,
yeah, of course.
Say that, and then also you need to be, for example, like backward or forward compatible.
That's,
I think that's part of managing it as a product, right?
Yeah.
And in terms of access, the same. I think as a product
but in,
manager.
In APIs, you can keep different versions online, for example.
Yeah.
In data, it's a bit more challenging, right?
But I think it's, I read a bit between the lines, it's difficult to define, like, what is the. This is what needs to happen from a tech point of view to enable a data mesh. Like, it depends a lot on the situation, and probably the principles of the data mesh are more important than the actual implementation, because you can go, like, there are so many variables to solving this problem. Like, there is no best answer, right? But the principles behind it are what should drive your decisions in making an architecture.
Exactly.
That is,
and this is what we're trying to look for as well. Like, what do you need to look for to take a good decision? And of course, we can name drop tools.
And that said, maybe Bruno, if you would think from the point of view of a large corporate, if the full budget to go all the way, you're going to build the data mesh, you're going to build the architecture for it. What would be tech-wise or stack-wise your wet dream?
So, Kafka setup. If I really have all the money, but I don't really believe any company can really, any large corporate can really achieve the all my sources or events kind of model. So then, second best option is BigQuery or Snowflake as really the central platform, and then. Yeah, DBT as much as DBT possible to prepare those data sets. But yeah, it would be nicer if DBT could be streaming. I know that they are talking about this, for example, but it would definitely be even better then.
And what about this last part? Like, that we said a bit of governance, putting the team together, or something. Any sort of tooling? I think this is, to me, still a very open topic.
Can you make it a bit more concrete?
Data hubs,
because we talked about, like, where do you put the data? Like, but how do you share it? How do you make it available? Like, we talked about, for example, versioning. Like, how do you give access? How do you monitor it? Like, this is something that's not.
Yeah. So we have been looking at Data Hub and open metadata, for example, which are probably interesting in this concept to expose, etc. What I'm missing a little bit there is kind of like they are very much reflecting the change, right? Like. I changed the data model. It's visible in the thing, but then you already broke a bunch of things, right? So like a way to say, watch out, this data set that I'm changing in the release in 3 weeks is going to go from A to B or from V1 to V2.
That's again, it's release management. It's your product management as a product manager.
Yeah.
You need to know, you know, where is my product used?
Yeah, exactly.
And before you do the release, you inform your users.
Yeah, and we know who's going to be responsible for it, but how you really enable this on a large scale, in an API, you just give this is next swagger, right? This is a swagger. It's going to be V4 and it's going to be available as from that moment. Here, yeah, you can have the new table layout and things like it's possible, but the tools around it, they're not really. I'm not aware that you can push into Metadata Hub a future version of the table or something like that.
No, but we've seen, this has been existing for quite some time. I mean, a very simple example, if you talk SQL views, right? Like people have been doing this forever. You can change the underlying table, still have the same view,
so that you
keep the same consumption, and you can add multiple views on top of the same data.
But the definition of how this should look like is like with Swagger is very clear. Like this is the contract that we have between one party and the other party.
Mm-hmm.
You have some concept around it, like within that we could use in the term in the context of metadata hubs and et cetera. But there's no de facto standard like there is, for example, with Swagger.
Yeah, I think there are a few things like people are looking more and more towards JSON schema to define these things. I think Avro has been there for... Yeah, but I think Avro has been there for a long time as well, like as a technology that can define, and also like, for example, like forward, backward compatibility is all ingrained in there. Like you can literally launch a tool that's going to tell you, is this backward or forward compatible? And you can use different serializers and deserializers. Like there are tools out there.
But that, if in the end your product is a table in Snowflake, it's difficult to rely on the Avro aspects, right? If it's
well, you can use Avro to create classes to fetch data, right? So like this is basically a view on your model.
But it's just to me. But it's maybe I'm wrong. If you say that Avro is so. I don't have the feeling like if you talk to a REST API developer, if you ask like what is the de facto standard for a contract, they're gonna say a Swagger spec. And if you are gonna ask a data engineer what is the de facto standard for a contract, I know that you're gonna say Avro, but most likely a lot of other people are gonna say other things or say that there is no
the. It's not just the interface, but like the entity itself, like the technical way, the technical change is going to be different also. So some might say it's going to be a table in a database, others going to say it's going to be a Parquet file on an object store.
Yeah, good point. Then again,
it's going to be events in a topic. So it's going to be events in Kinesis or PubSub, like it's not just REST or gRPC as in the API world. The options are a lot larger. And I think you could restrain it, but then like it feels like complexifying a lot, right? Like if you're going to say, oh, all data access is going to be through
one or the other, and again I'm not specific to Avro, but anyway. It's just like a nice piece of.
Yeah, you have the protobuf now also, right?
Kind of but even because you said JSON schema, maybe okay. But there is a lot of tooling around it, that you can also use for these things.
For JSON schema. Yuck.
Now we're talking about you mentioned also a few roles. I mean, what would be the impact for, you know, what can a data engineer expect? Well, how will this impact his or her life in, I don't know, a year time when kind of data management becomes more pervasive? How is it going to change their life?
My opinion, it doesn't change it that much, especially not in terms of tooling, because like we've been talking the same thing that you could see in the data lake since the beginning. I think the biggest changes are really going to be, and again, not for this episode, I know, but on the organizational level. Like, it's a mindset. It's really more of a how you do things than with what you do them with. Like,
I think what should change is that you have lunch with business people instead of other data engineers, because you're embedded in those teams.
Exactly. Yeah. I think for a data engineer, like you will see a lot more like what you do and the impact you can have. But again, that's more organizational than tool.
But then do you think that engineers will work more isolated, let's say? Like they would be just, instead of working on a team of five, you'd be alone on a team, the sales team or something?
Well, but you're still working with other people, right?
Yeah,
but isolated from
I'm thinking
your
more like on the knowledge sharing if you get stuck on all these things, right? Like, is there a downside there? Like,
it was mentioned before, like big companies have been doing this for quite some time, and it's cross-functional teams, and then you have
chapters
and stuff to link back people doing the same work back together, so that they exchange ideas and that they build stuff together.
But then, like, if you're not that big, and it's a very fair point that Murilo was making. If you're with 10 people and suddenly you're distributed and you're alone within a team, like you don't have the backup or the...
We're talking organization and like, what does it mean to be distributed if you're 10 guys? If you're not distributed.
But are you then making the argument that you need a certain size to do the data mesh well?
To me, there is no point of building 100 microservices if you're 3 guys in a room.
It depends on your company, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, it's big. All these things are made because you need, like, there is a struggle to scale and a decentralization that needs to happen. Like, if that's not a need that you have, like, you can go for another solution.
So I think you need some scale, but what you were alluding to is, okay, I have one data engineer embedded in a team, so that's a risk. But the idea is that the other people from the team, maybe not the first day, but they can back up this person, right? Like that what this person is doing is on a higher level, so that maybe this person can do it faster, but the others in the team, they understand what they are doing, and it's part of the overall team. So if you are really afraid of this person needs to be there, then something is wrong in the in the execution.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm thinking about what it could be, I'm not an app developer, but so if you have an app developer, probably other people can in the team can also understand what is there and maybe change the color of some pages, and probably those people should also be able to add a field in some of the extracts that you're providing.
Yeah. I mean, and I agree that like probably if you have a big organization, you're going to have some chapters and you can share knowledge and all this stuff, but I don't feel like that's quite the same as you having someone that you're working with day in, day out, and they know what the problem is and they know all these things, right? I mean, and also I know some people, some developers, they don't like to work alone, right? Like some people, they simply dislike that.
You don't work alone.
You have the same problem in Agile, in the movement to save, where you are indeed, like you mentioned earlier, with the cross-functional teams, the solution they propose, and maybe it applies here as well, is the concept of guilds and where you kind of have a network of people who basically do the same work that you are doing, but maybe for a different team that you can reach out to if you need questions or help. But you're working cross-functionally with an analyst and with a data scientist and with a business person directly for other business people who are going to really use whatever you're building on a day-to-day basis.
But that means that your governance around that, that your structure around that needs to be... Like it needs to breed this philosophy, eh? Because it's nice to say like, okay, there's a data engineer on another team and you should exchange ideas with them, but it takes a lot of conscious effort to actually do that.
Yeah, you need to organize for it.
Yeah, but I really think like we're leaning towards the next episode with organization, but like it's something that you need to consciously make a choice on and consciously remedy it, like kind of afterwards saying, okay, like we've spread everybody around, like let's bring them back together.
Yeah, and I think again, it's also, I feel, it is kind of like a top-down decision as well. The people that are allocating the time for this and that, they have to see the value in this, right? Like, okay, but so I don't know, sometimes I get a bit, not scared, but you know, I don't see that happening, you know? Sometimes I see the people that are calling the shots are like the people, they just want results all the time. And they don't really take into account this moments of, okay, we're making things more like independent, you know? And yeah, like you kind of lose a bit of that. And that's something that could, I mean, we're talking about the impact. It would be, I could see that happening as well. I don't know if that's off the table necessarily. Or for example, I also saw a couple of places that they do have these guilds and stuff, but it's pretty dead. You know, like they create a channel on Slack,
But
that's not bringing people together.
Right? Yeah, but I mean that's what they claim, right? They say, okay, we have a.
I mean, I fully agree. I think that this shows the importance of the organizational aspect of data mesh. I think it's, and you alluded to it earlier, but I think it's very difficult to have a conversation about data mesh and not somehow touch on the organizational aspect of it, because it's really front and center to how you ever make it work.
The principles are more organization related than they are tech stack related, right?
But your point on, like, will companies do it? I'm still surprised by how many companies are implementing SAFe, right? Where they are. So I think the digital transformation and this need to, the scare that a lot of companies have around digital, etc., is leading of giving the example on what is possible around data. I think digital transformation starts more with the digital part, but definitely data is part of there, and it's just going to follow quickly. And yes, you will have laggards or people that don't go for it. But definitely others will go for it, I think.
So cool. But so we have a nice segue into our next conversation, which will be more organizationally oriented, I think.
Yes.
Which means we are getting close to the quote of the day. Inspiration. Cool.
Okay, based on my thorough research, I came up with two, but I guess I'll just...
No, don't influence him, Gautier. Yeah. Don't influence him.
Simon's like... No, I just... This is has nothing to do with anything, but since I was asked to do it, that's what I want to share. And it's a saying from Brazil, actually, that in Portuguese it reads, água mole em pedra dura, tanto bate até que fura. And I actually Google translated this, so to see how I can best translate it. And it goes to soft water on hard stone, so much it beats until it sticks. I'm not sure you make of it what you want, but that's my quote.
I think it's a great quote.
Yeah, thank you. Do you have, can you have an applause there?
I think we can have a whole. Let me try.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Kevin and Pithia, you guys can imagine.
On that note, thanks a lot, Marina. Thanks a lot, everybody. See you all next time.